How dare you?
I'm going to get so much mileage out of that button. Oh my god, welcome everybody to the live stream and to the spotlight for Batman vs. Superman. I guess we're officially kicking off our road to Justice League, as it were. I'm going to have the wonderful opportunity to be over on one of my guests' show in just about a week to talk about what we're looking forward to that film, in that film, what we're looking forward to in that film, what we're looking to for that. Thank you.
I agree.
We've got a couple of guests here tonight to join me, and essentially what we're going to do is we're not necessarily so much going to review the film as we are just going to just put out some talking points and have a discussion about different aspects of this film, some that we like, some that we dislike, some that, you know, we want to just yell Martha about. So joining me tonight are two members of our Podfix network that I absolutely love. First and foremost, you know him, you love him, you hear him pretty much every week on the Epic Film Guys. That's him, Dan Brennick of Netflix and Swill, in the house, wearing a Pikachu hat. How are you, Dan?
Do they love me? Because I don't think they love me.
They love that hat, or, you know, they should.
They love the hat. That,
if they don't.
The hat is the only reason they're tuning into the live stream, let's be honest here.
All right. And the legend himself, the king, the god.
Oh,
no, wait,
no.
God fixes
oh,
me.
Oh, no.
The, you're like the, are you like the Jesus? If Brayton's God fix, are you like, are you our Holy Spirit? The Holy Spirit of the Podfix Network, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh no,
Tom!
maybe fine wines and spirits, but that's about it.
Fine wines and spirits. Tom Coe, Jake and Tom Conquer the World is here with us. Tom Coe, how are you tonight?
Doing very well.
I just had very one well. Sip of this. Look at this bottle, Old Rasputin Imperial Russian Stout.
I've had that.
I feel like this,
hold on, I gotta see this fucking thing.
This bottle tastes night. Like suicide. I feel like that.
Oh my god. That reminds me so much of a Nikolai bottle. Jesus
look,
Christ.
See what the bottle looks like? That's exactly what it tastes like too. It tastes like an old Russian man. It tastes really good, but holy god, this is strong as balls. Over it's, on the main show.
Like Rasputin, you have to really work at it to kill that bottle.
I love you, Tom Coe. we do it on the normal show all the time, but since we're live streaming tonight, I'll pitch it over to you guys. What are you drinking?
I'm back! Puke and rally! Yeah. Woo!
Give me a beer. And I will kick it over to you, Mr. Brennick. What kind of swill are you imbibing for us this evening?
Well, it's not swill, I can tell you that. I am drinking a Stone Vengeful Spirit IPA. Ooh. It is 7.3 alcohol by volume. I'm trying to remember the IBUs off the top of my head, and I can't. I think it's like 70-something. And it's good. I like it. It apparently has juicy pineapple and mandarin orange flavor. I don't taste that at all.
But it's not a New England style IPA, correct?
I wouldn't even know how to fucking describe that.
Yeah. Beer that Justin likes for 100, Alex. And Tom Coe, you usually are kicking back some kind of homebrew or something like that. You got anything for us tonight?
Not a homebrew tonight, but this is one of my ill-gotten beers that I'm taking advantage of the make-your-own four-pack with. The local store right around the corner from me has, you know, where you make your own four-pack for $7. So, of course, I'm loading it up with bottles that are normally $8 a piece that you're not supposed to use. And tonight I'm... Let's see. Let me get this bottle out. It's Jolly Pumpkins, and it's not a pumpkin beer. It's a Saison, but it's called Bam Noir. It's a very tart, very sour beer, and it's become one of my favorites anymore.
And yeah, I'm drinking Old Rasputin's Russian Imperial Stout, which basically tastes like Rasputin's taint chips if they, you know, scraped them into into a vat and, you know, with some hops and some malts and made beer out of it. It's really good, but it is powerful stuff. I feel like I could, like, strip the fucking paint off a car with this shit. It says it's only...
Yeah, and like Rasputin, wow. It's fighting all the way down.
Yeah, it's only 9% alcohol by volume. It tastes way boozier than that. And I've had beers that have more alcohol per volume that don't taste as boozy as this does. I guess it's just the way that the malts are working kind of in tandem with it.
Sure.
All right. Well, gentlemen, we assembled this evening to talk about a film that is much maligned in the fan community, even though I really think that Favor has turned more towards it or more for it. Mm-hmm. In recent time, I don't think people are as harsh about it as they once were, even though you still definitely have those detractors that swear it's the worst movie they've ever seen, which can't possibly be true if they've ever seen Live by Night. So,
I mean, I respond to that by saying I am a professional terrible movie watcher, and I've seen far worse movies than that.
Than what, this or Live by Night?
Yes.
Yes. So you see, I don't think, and once the extended edition came out, I think a lot of opinions really turned more favorably towards it. I remember back when the extended cut came out, there was this whole Twitter movement of apologizing to Zack Snyder, like, we're sorry, Zack Snyder, like people that had harshly treated the film and then they watched the extended cut, which really, really, when you watch it, and then you watch the theatrical cut, you realize how big of a disservice the theatrical cut is to what he wanted to do with that film. After, like, the extended cut is head and shoulders a better film. So that's the film we're going to talk about tonight. And of course, we're talking about Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. So Tom Coe, I'm going to kick it over to you first.
Okay.
I don't even know where to begin with this film. There's so many things you could start kind of pulling the layers back on and kind of examining. So what did you want to talk about first in terms of Batman versus Superman?
Well, yesterday I sent you that screenshot that I did of the shells hitting the ground. I think it really bookends the movie, because at the start you have the flashback of Bruce Wayne remembering his parents' death, and you see the classic framing of the gun shells hitting the ground, the pearls hit, you know, soon behind. And at the end of the movie, you kind of have the same thing, really, with the shells from Superman's funeral in the cannons hitting the ground. And I think it's just one of the many examples of this movie kind of being misunderstood, because one of the biggest complaints I hear about this is, why do we have to see Thomas and Martha Wayne die again? And the reason why is because that is Batman's entire motivation for being. And he's done what he did. He thought he was done, but he went to some dark places. And now his new motivation is the example set by Superman, especially with his sacrifice of himself in order to save the planet.
And yeah, I think my response to you or something like that was a very sarcastic, but Tom Coe, this is a Zack Snyder film. There's no thematic depth in it.
No, of course not.
Absolutely not.
I mean, if I had a preference of the three in, like, the live action Batmans, I'm going to pick Snyder's, to be 100% honest. If only because he does that thing like he does in Watchmen, where it's just really nice slow-mo shots and really, like, up-close shots of, like you mentioned, the bullet casing and the gun, the pearls hitting the ground. And this is all intercut with Bruce, the young Bruce, falling down the cave. I just think visually it was spectacular. And Zimmer's score is perfection in this film, and we'll talk about the score, I'm sure, a lot. But Dan, did you have anything you wanted to say about any, like, the opening, or, as Tom Coe said, the mirror image? Because you definitely do get the same kind of shot toward the end of the film with that big cannon shell hitting the ground in the same way.
Well, I am one of those people that looks at the Wayne murders again and just went, all right, we've seen this many times in like movies Like, I don't really need to see this again. Like, yes, it's like you said, Nick, it is the best looking Wayne Murders, but it's like how everyone was with Spider-Man Homecoming. It's like, well, if we fucking see this kid gets bit by a spider again, I'm gonna like go postal on these people. Like, that's kind of how I felt with this. Was like, hey, I have seen this before. I don't need to see it again. I know who Batman is. I'm sure most of the people going to see this movie know who Batman is. So while I do appreciate all the techniques that Zack Snyder used and just how much better visually it looks than the other two, it was still really aggravating to open up a movie with the Wayne Murders.
How dare you?
I will use that at every opportunity.
Now, I mean, the theatrical cut versus the Ultimate Edition, I think it comes down to the main problems that I have with this movie. They really should have gone through another couple drafts before they filmed one frame, because the Ultimate Edition does clear up a lot of issues, but I don't think that this was a movie that necessarily needed to have a 3-hour plus runtime. No. You could have gotten rid of a bunch of things and it would have been, frankly, a much better movie. You know, you didn't need to have the seeds planted with the weird surveillance films. You didn't have to have, hardly any of the stuff with Wonder Woman. I mean, honestly, they just crammed her in for world building, and I don't know. It just doesn't feel like a very organic movie. As much as I like it, I'm not going to be one of those people that think it's a masterpiece or there's no need to defend it.
I'm going to take it even further back than that. I'm going to take it all the way back to Man of Steel coming out. And Man of Steel opened to a relatively mixed critical consensus and didn't perform necessarily as well as WB had hoped. And they were already on their heels trying to play catch up to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So they decided, you know, it was announced like insanely early. They had the gentleman that plays Swanwick come out. And he sat there and he said, you know, he quoted that line from The Dark Knight Returns, like, remember, I'm the one who beat you or whatever. Like, announcing right then and there that Batman was going to be in this film. I think conceptually that's the problem with this film. And I mean, I'll come back to it a number of times as we go through the film. But I think if you excise the entire Batman plot from this film, It would cut the runtime down by an hour, number one, if not longer. And number two, I mean, the entire Luthor plot, like, his entire plot is to make humanity turn against Superman. That plot still works entirely whether Batman is in this film or not. 100%. Mm. This film doesn't need Batman, and you're right, Tomko, it doesn't need Wonder Woman either. The problem is the studio, they were jittery. After Man of Steel came out, they were worried that it wasn't performing as well as they had hoped, and they were worried that the critical consensus wasn't glowing like all the Marvel films are. So they decided to add DC's powerhouse, Batman. You know, of course, he just came off the Nolan franchise, which was like, what, $3 billion, $2.5 billion in ticket grosses. Everybody loves Batman. Mm-hmm. He's by far the most popular superhero, like, in terms of films, like, period. You know? So it's like, They made that decision that they were going to add Batman to the film. And I think conceptually they had this idea in their heads of this is where a Man of Steel sequel was going to go. And I think adding Batman to the mix, I think it works in some ways. And I think it muddles it in other ways. There's long portions of even the extended cut of this film where Superman's not anywhere to be found, where they're focusing entirely on Batman and some subplot that's going on with his character. If you excise all that from this film and just make the main plot of the film Luthor turning humankind against Superman, and then, you know, when his plan to turn humankind against Superman fails, then he hatches Doomsday and, you know, Superman gives his life to destroy him. I was talking to Dan about it earlier, and I mean, yes, I mean, dialogue issues aside and whatever, little quibbles, I would think this was a 10 out of 10 movie. I'd fucking love that movie. I really, really enjoyed Batman versus Superman, but the more I watch it, and watching it today, it's like every time I watch it subsequently, I dislike the presence of Batman in the film, like, exponentially more every time I watch it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's like you said, though. because of the mixed reaction to Man of Steel, a movie that I love, but because of that mixed reaction, it was like, well, we don't necessarily want to move on to a Man of Steel 2 yet, even though Man of Steel 2, you can see that, you know, Lex Luthor versus Superman was like Man of Steel 2.
Yeah, it's definitely like that, in this
like,
film, yeah.
And then they just like put little cuts in there and we're just like, all right, here's a Batman part. All right, here's another Batman part. All right, here's a Batman part. Here's a Batman and Wonder Woman part. Like, that's fine. And all that stuff. But like, because of the mixed reaction to it, it was like, well, Batman did well. We'll just do Dark Knight Returns, and we'll just throw that into this movie, and people will love it, right? Because everyone loves Dark Knight Returns.
It's funny when you say do Dark Knight Rises, because that was already like half of the Dark Knight Returns anyway. Like that, like there was a huge part of that was adapted from that. So it's like, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Tomko, I got to throw it over to you for any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I'd say the biggest problem that Warner Brothers has is they're a little too reactionary. I think they listen to the fans a little bit too much, because Man of Steel was a reaction to the failed movie that was Superman Returns, and Batman v Superman was a response to their failed expectations with Man of Steel. I mean, I think maybe they need to have somebody, not necessarily Zack Snyder, but I think they need to have somebody who has a vision and is willing to stick with that vision. And thus far, we haven't really seen that outside of Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see. I mean, once Justice League comes out, and of course, there's a lot that, because when I come on, you know, Jake and Tom with Justin, you know, next week to talk about what we're looking forward to in Justice League, I really, really think that's going to be a lot of our focus is going to be on how cohesive is this film going to be, and is it going to kind of drive the DCEU narrative as a whole forward?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, because Justice League is all about building the team, and like we've gotten enough of Batman. You know, it's Batman. You really don't need like, and that's kind of what I like about this, like Batman vs Superman, is that you don't need a lot of Batman. Like you don't need backstory. Like of course, like you have the whole Wayne murders, but like other than that, you're not getting a ton of backstory into Batman, because you know what that character is. He's had what, 7 theatrical releases now in order to like for anyone to understand that character. So that was cool. The more I think about it, the more I think Wonder Woman's kind of just totally worthless in this movie. Like I just like she is how I feel about it's how you feel about Batman, Nick, is how I feel about Wonder Woman. I feel like she is totally irrelevant to this plot and just winds up like overbloating this movie, because her scenes take up another 10 minutes or so
easily,
and it's just like, ugh. Like you could cut down on runtime just by cutting one character.
And you know what? One of the worst offenders, I don't mean to cut you off, Dan, but one of the worst offenders of that is right before the Batman Superman fight, literally right before.
Oh God. No,
they cut to all of a sudden in Wonder Woman's in her hotel and all she's watching all the, you know, metahuman videos of all the different, you know, would be Justice League members. It's like a 4 or 5 minute long sequence. It's literally right before the Batman versus Superman fight. This whole movie's led up to this moment. And now full stop, here's Wonder Woman watching some movies. Like here's Wonder Woman watching.
Essentially
YouTube,
it's a commercial for future movies.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I've always lamented, and I've hated when Marvel does this kind of thing, and I hate it here too. Like the whole nightmare vision thing of like Batman in the desert with the Omega symbol and fighting the parademons, that whole thing, it's a beautiful sequence. I hate it. It has no place in this film. It doesn't need to be here. It's just pointless world building.
I agree.
Well, imagine for a second that scene never gets pulled out, or I'm sorry, you pull out that nightmare scene, and then it just cuts back to Bruce waking up from a nightmare or whatever to see the Flash come out. Do you think that would have worked better?
I think excise the scene with the Flash too. I think that has to go too.
Mm-hmm.
I think get rid of any world building. I unless it's just an Easter egg, unless it's like the littlest, like in Man of Steel, like one of the satellites that Zod and Superman crashed through was a Wayne Tech satellite. That's fine. Mm-hmm. That's as far as I want my world building to go. Just like planting little seeds of different things, or like Colonel Ferris, you know, planting that seed is perfectly fine. But I think when it has to be so overt like this, I think it's ridiculous. And like I said, that's the same way like Iron Man 2 was. Iron Man 2 was basically just a long commercial for the Avengers, you know? So it's like, I really, really wish they wouldn't have decided to try to shove all this stuff in here. But it's very, very true. They were being very reactionary, as Tomko said. They're trying to basically throw everything in the kitchen sink at you at one time. You know, let's just, I can picture like the meeting now, like they're just sitting there and they're like, look, just get Batman in it. Just get Wonder Woman in it. We'll get the Trinity on the screen. Who cares? And then we'll figure the rest of it out later. Like, that's really what it feels like happened in this movie. Oh, man, this has been far more like negative BVS stuff than I thought it was going to be at the onset. But like, let's not make any bones about it.
Don't get me wrong. I love this movie.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to say that it's not without its faults. I mean, I have some friends who will bitterly defend this movie to the point where they get pissed off and they get into arguments of it. And I can't do that because a lot of the criticisms, frankly, are fair.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And like I said, I mean, I really feel like if you just focus on making this a Man of Steel sequel, and then like I don't even know what they could have done like past that, like if they kill Superman at the end of just a Man of Steel 2 film. Like, I don't know where the DCEU goes from there. Like, that's beyond me, I think. I think maybe you do like a solo Batman and then lead into Justice League, whatever. Who cares? But the point being, like, it's just trying to do too much too fast. And I'll be right there with you, Tomko. I love this film. I love so many things about this film, especially Cavill. I love his Superman. I love him, especially in this film. I think he's even better in this film somehow than he was in Man of Steel. And I love the character arc that he has in this film. And that for me is why I'm still so in love with the film. And like, let's just put it out on the table. Zack Snyder is it's like visually masturbating. Every screen, every frame is beautiful. Every frame is so well crafted and so well thought out in this film, except for that really shitty shot of Superman being pushed by the laser with Doomsday later on in the movie that they added to the extended cut for no reason. I hate that shot. But like the rest of it, I really, it's such a beautiful film. It does so much right. As much as we can maybe all agree that Wonder Woman, especially, and maybe to some degree Batman for you guys, definitely for me, but even still, we also got amazing incarnations of those characters, and we got sequences of those characters. Like, name me a better live action Batman action sequence than the warehouse scene, you know?
I can't. I don't know if anybody can. Maybe yeah, where he's trying to get rid of a bomb.
Maybe. It's just like it does so much right. And like I said, especially for me, it's the plot thread of following Superman as Luthor tries to turn the world against him. I think that for me is the heart and soul of this film. And I think a lot of people really miss the boat when they are watching this film and when they're thinking about that, because I wrote this down in here in my notes when I was talking about the film, but I wrote down, I said, this is the enduring legacy of the film. Everyone who hates Superman in this movie, or everyone who believes that he doesn't embody hope and good, they're the people that are on these news stations in the film, like Nancy Grace and like all these other things, where they're questioning his motives all the time. Like, I think that was entirely the point of the film. And it's amazing to me that in spite of all that, time and time again in the film, even when he doubts himself for the briefest of moments, he still comes through. He still just does nothing but put other people first and ultimately puts the entire planet first above himself. That's why I love this movie, because that is fucking beautiful. And it's Superman to me. Like, but
Now, you keep saying that you kind of wish that Batman wasn't in this movie, and for the same reasons why you love Superman's arc in this movie, I equally love Batman's arc, because here's a man who is motivated by tragedy with the death of his family, as well as the life that, frankly, he should have lived. And finally, he gets to the point where he is willing, maybe not willing to move on, but at least willing to be a functioning human being. And all of that is taken away from him again. Again, that's why you have that sequence in the beginning, because you're seeing him sink and rise again. And the reaction that that character has to this presence of a godlike being who could potentially wipe out the planet, I think is completely justified, which, again, is why I think this movie is very largely, I don't know if it's misunderstood, but or maybe the narrative is muddied. But it all makes sense to me. This is what that character would do. And to see him find hope again, to see him become the Batman that we all know and love, I love seeing that transformation in that character every time I watch this movie.
Let me just say kudos to Zack Snyder in general for making a Superman that I actually like, because I don't like Superman as a character. I don't like the Christopher Reeve Superman, because it's just like, oh man, everyone universally loves this guy. Like, he is just the best. Like, everyone loves him, and he's a Boy Scout and everything's wonderful. And you're just like, but why? Why does everyone love him? Like, you guys all do understand that he could just murder you at any moment in time. And that's what we got.
That's why I love him. Because he can murder us. He can take over the planet. But because of the values that were instilled in him by his upbringing, he knows right from wrong, and he always does his best to do the right thing. That's why I love the character. Mm-hmm.
My real hate, well, not hatred, because I don't mind the character, especially like in the animated Justice League cartoons. I really liked him just taking the hits, because it's like, ah, good. But I just didn't like how everyone was just like, oh yeah, this guy's fine. This guy, like, we're cool with this all-powerful being just existing. And we finally got something that's a bit more realistic with the portrayal in Man of Steel and in Batman vs. Superman, where it's like, well, we have this all-powerful being, and should he do what he does? Should we regulate what he does? You know, all this stuff. And like, there are people that fucking hate him because he's an alien, and, like, let's be clear here. There are racists. There are bigots. There will be alien haters, or whatever you want to call those people, like, if as a short-term word. I don't know. But, like, you can't say that everyone would lovingly accept Superman immediately. Like, if he just shows up and just like, hey, I beat this guy who came from my planet, and, you know, believe me, trust me, you know, that guy's different than me. You know, he has to earn that trust. And, you know, there are people that hate him because, you know, they've seen the bad alien. It's very much like racism today, where it's like, hey, you've seen the bad people, so now you're going to hate the same people. But, like, they're not bad. They're you know, there's just they're different ideologies. So, like, with Superman, it's like slowly trying to earn everyone's trust back. And, you know, everyone says, oh, this is a mopey Superman. Well, of course it's a fucking mopey Superman. This is a realistic portrayal of a person. Like, Superman is hated by some and loved by some. You know, if you're hated by people, that does affect you, and that does take a toll on you. And you will question your motivations. You will be like, man, should I really keep doing what I am doing? And because he's Superman, he's like, yes, I have to keep going because I have the power to help these people, and I want to help these people.
Yeah, and I think that's a perfect point, Dan. And I actually wrote in my notes, this film, if you really think about it, I mean, think about the way our society is today, about how, like, much vitriol, how much anger, how much hatred there is out there about any little thing. You say anything on social media, and there are people just hardline flipping out about it, or just going whatever it is. You know, and I think that this film is also a really great indictment against the 24-hour news cycle that's perpetuated in this country and around the world, because all you do, as soon as something or anything happens, everybody, media just descends on it and dissects every little thing about it. And you've got people that editorialize. I love that they put Nancy Grace in this film. I think that that was, I can't stand that woman. I'm going to stab her between the fucking eyes with an ice pick. But I think it's poignant that she's in this film because she is one of the worst examples of people in the media that editorialize this kind of stuff. And in her scene, especially, she's painting Superman as a villain, you know, and that to me is the one of the most enduring, one of the greatest things that this film does is it's an indictment against that. You're all throwing doubt at this character. You're all hating this character. There's a great sequence in this film. It's played against commentary, news commentators, you know, talking heads, whatever, that are talking about Superman and what they believe his place in the world should be. And you know what? All those scenes are cut against sequences of Superman saving people. That's all he's doing the whole time is just saving people. And that's what I love about this character. Dan said it already, is that in spite of everybody hating him, he even has moments of self-doubt. He blames himself for the bombing at the Capitol. That's why he has that crisis of conscience. He has that momentary, you know, crisis in his head. But even still, Superman endures and Superman understands that, yes, he does have to do that. And by the end of this film, like, no matter what happens, he still gives his life to save it because it's his home, because this is his world and this is the place that he loves. I love that about this film. I love that so much about this film. And I feel like those people that are standing out in front of the Capitol, God hates aliens, like those are the people that dislike this film. Like, they're hard-lined against it, and I don't think they even know why. I really don't. And I want to go back, Tom, because you actually were talking about how you loved the character arc of Batman in this film. And you know what? Mm-hmm. The great thing about it is I don't disagree with you at all. I love the character arc that they were able to give this character. I love what they were able to do with Batman because they made him a darker, more violent version of this character who has lost his one rule, who has lost, you know, so much in his life. You get the shot of the Robin costume spray painted. And this is a character that's obviously been beaten down. He says at one point that criminals are like weeds. You pull one out and two grow up in its place. You can tell he's weary. He's exhausted of this life of being the vigilante that he's been. And it's very, very easy to see how, again, through media manipulation, through Luthor manipulating people, how he's able to come to fear this thing that he really just misunderstands. You know, I think you're absolutely right. I think they gave him a fantastic character arc. I just think, like, to me, Superman's always going to be my guy. I've always loved Superman as a character more than Batman, so I'm always going to pick him over him. But, like, to me, I just really think that it's very, very obvious, especially, and they set it up perfectly in the extended cut, because that whole desert scene, what they're trying to do, the fact that they're trying to set up Superman, they make it very, very clear in the extended cut. In the theatrical cut, it's like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, right?
But, you know, I don't think that the film needs Batman. I think when they added him, I think that for the most part, like, they created a fantastic character arc for him. They made him make sense within the story that they were trying to tell for the most part. It's just, if you cut him entirely out of it, if you just make this a Superman film, if you just make this Man of Steel 2, I think it's tighter and I think it works that much better. I really, really do.
I could see that. Now, real quick, speaking of Batman's character arc, one of the big controversies of this movie was the fact that they showed Batman killing people.
Mm-hmm.
What is your take on that, guys?
I don't give a fuck.
Who cares?
I'm not a comic book reader, though, so I think that's a... I don't know. Well, I don't want to necessarily say that it's like a comic book purist kind of standpoint, because I think I've seen people that are across whatever other spectrum about it, but like, to me, like, I've grown up with Batman in movies. That's how I've always seen Batman, and then of course, you know, the animated series or whatever, but I've never ever not had a Batman that was a killer, if that makes sense. Like, I don't read comic books.
Yeah.
So, like, my first exposure to the character was Batman 89, straight up ice and dudes, And like,
Batman he blew up a factory with all kinds of people in it, including probably janitors, security people, guys that had nothing to do with the Joker. I guarantee you, Batman iced those fuckers because, you got to crack some eggs to make an omelet.
Well, think of all the goons like on the floats in the parade. Like he comes into the Batwing, just flips out those machine guns and just mows down half of the Joker's goons. Like that was the Batman that I've always grown up with. So for me, it didn't faze me in the least. And then, of course, I walk out of the movie and, of course, the whole furor is, oh, my God, Batman's killing people. But for me, that's never been a part of his character to me. I mean, it was, of course, in the Nolan films. And I loved the way that Nolan used that. But I also loved in that film, in The Dark Knight especially, the way that Nolan uses that against Batman. I loved that about that film. It was one of the best things that Nolan did with it. So, yeah, that was a really roundabout, long-winded way of saying I don't care.
Well, I mean, as a comic book reader, I can tell you, Batman has killed plenty of people in the comic books. You know, just this righteous fake indignation that people had over this. It's like, I wish you could take this fury and this passion that you have and apply it to something that matters. You know?
Oh, my God.
I think a lot of the fury came from people who were watching Batman the Animated Series. And because of that being a children's cartoon and he couldn't kill people because of that, well, that became ingrained in their mind that Batman doesn't kill. And it's like, well, that's not true. You could go back to any number of comic books, like you said, in years prior, where he has straight up murdered people, or go back to Batman 89, what the animated series is kind of based off of, and just watch him kill people. I just feel like people honed in on the animated series and just went, that's canon. And that's the only canon that matters. He doesn't kill anybody because it's a kid's cartoon. Yeah. But if you think about it, especially back in the 80s with Frank Miller, Batman was straight up maiming people. And it was is this better? do you want this as opposed to him just straight up murdering people? All right, he's going to put people in the hospital for years. They're not going to be able to.
Oh, he flat out paralyzes people.
Yeah, he fucks up people's lives regardless of if he kills them or not. Like, you can't say that Batman is this altruistic dude who's just all right, I'm just going to go knock out this guy. Knocking out somebody is just you make them lose consciousness, and that isn't good for you.
Batman's causing brain damage to the Penguin.
Oh my God, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, there's a story, and this is where I'm going to have to let my geek flag fly, called 10 Nights of the Beast. And coincidentally enough, the character of the Beast was loosely adapted into Batman v Superman, where the way that Batman stopped him from killing the president was to lead him down to the sewers of Gotham and barricade him shut into a tiny room and leave him to die of starvation and or dehydration. Now, he may not have directly killed him with a gun or a knife, but he fucking killed him.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a lot of that with Batman, even in the Nolan films, leaving Ra's al Ghul to die on the train.
Yep.
You know, I don't have to kill you, but I don't have to save you. You're still killing him, dude. You know what? In watching the extended cut again today, and this is one of the things that I really love, these little touches that we get with this is Mercy Graves. And she's a character that has maybe one line in the entire film. I love, and I mean, we'll get to that, Dan, but I love the way that they basically use her as just kind of a Lex is behind this. So they'll pepper her into the background of different shots, or they'll pepper her into different shots so that, you know, this is all part of Lex's plan. They does the same thing with the Russian guy. Was it KG Beast or whatever I think his name is? Yeah. Same exact thing with that character. I love the way that they pepper these characters in there. So you always feel Lex's hand and you always feel Lex's machinations, even when you don't see Luthor himself. I really, really, I really didn't think I'd noticed it as much as I did when I watched the film today. I really, really love that about it.
As somebody who watched both Batman the Animated Series and the Superman Animated Series, and seeing what we got from Mercy Graves on this, and this is me fanboying just a little bit. Boy, was I really disappointed that Mercy Graves was just like, all right, we're going to kill you now. And it's just like, what the, are you kidding me? Like, this character has so much more that she can do. And you're just like, all right, welcome to sacrificial lambism. I'm Mercy Graves. Here, I'm going to sit in this courtroom as a guy's wheelchair explodes. Like, come on. Please. I like that character. I feel like she's a cool character, especially there's a Superman in the Superman the Animated Series. There's an episode where she finally gets her own back against Lex Luthor. Of course, episodes later, she's back to working for Lex Luthor because that's how these shows work. But
well, she's got to put food on the table somehow.
Yeah, that's true. I think she was running LexCorp, and then Lex just comes back, and she's just like, I've been saving the seat for you. And I'm like, what are you, what, no, bad Mercy Graves.
Well, and I think we've gone long enough without bringing him up, because he's definitely one of the most controversial aspects of the film. But Eisenberg as Luthor, and I've never made my feelings about the character hidden. I absolutely love him. I love him as this character. I think he... Fuck, this dude is evil. I wish that Marvel villains got the kind of treatment that this character does. Now, whether you're the biggest fan of his performance or whether you think he was maybe a little bit over the top, there's room for debate there, I think. But I think the way that they wrote this character, and I think what they give this character in terms of actions, and I think of what they give this character in terms of things to do, I love him. I absolutely, absolutely love him in this role. And this Luthor is fucking dark. He just straight, I mean, his henchmen, of course, it's almost never him, but he straight, you know, has a whole bunch of people murdered in the desert. He straight just blows up this bomb in the Capitol, killing hundreds of people. You know, like, this is a Luthor that will stop at nothing in order to destroy Superman. First, you know, destroy his reputation, and then, like, literally destroy him when he creates Doomsday. I love how vicious and evil this character is. And there's the scene on the top of LexCorp Tower after he kidnaps Lois and shoves her off, and then Superman flies up there. I really love what Snyder does here, because he starts off in the scene shooting from Superman's angle, looking down at Luthor, looking down at him like he's this small little ant, like he's, you know, Superman's big and powerful. But by the end of the scene, Superman's kneeling in front of him, and we're down still in Superman's point of view, and now we're looking up, and it's an upward angle at Lex, and Lex is looming over the camera, and now he looks that much more powerful. And that scene still sends chills down my spine. I don't care. I love, 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 love that character. I think he's fantastic in the role. I know a lot of people disagree with that, but I think he's great.
I want to agree with you. I just thought I thought he was written well. I thought the shots were composed well. I just thought that a lot of his choices as an actor were odd. You know, I don't picture Lex as somebody who even approaches unhinged, and he was fairly unhinged in this movie.
Oh, he was, yeah.
Lex Luthor is supposed to be an intellectual long game runner. I agree, and he was playing a very long game in here, but he didn't really ever come across as somebody who was mentally stable. The party scene, how anybody could watch that speech and think that this guy is A-okay without any need of chemical help is beyond me.
Yeah, in fact, I go so far as to say I hate that party scene just from the Lex perspective, in that, like, this isn't the Lex, like, that was kind of like our first foray really into Lex Luthor, which is like, all right, sure, we got, like, him being weird around, you know, the government people, but, like, he's at this party and he's speaking in public and he's not making any sense. And it's just like, what are you doing? Like, this, what is this character?
No, he should have a public facade, which would make the scene with the senator that much more revealing. Mm-hmm. You know, he could have put up this stoic front at that party scene, and then he could have come unhinged with the senator And that would have made it so much better, I think.
I mean, that's some kind of conversation to have there between, you know, Terrio and between Snyder and between Eisenberg, you know, because it's definitely not the fault of just one person there. It's definitely that maybe he was written that way on the page. And, you know, mm-hmm. that comes across in Eisenberg's performance. And that's the way that Snyder directed the character. So, you know, I think you have to marry all three of those aspects together. If you dislike the character, I think levying it just at Eisenberg's feet isn't
it's unfair.
Necessarily fair.
Yeah.
Because I think that, you know, especially for the way that the character's written in the film, I think that he does a good job with it. And I like that they didn't go for, like, the big menacing and imposing Lex Luthor, like, where he's a much bigger, much more imposing figure. I like that they kind of played with that physicality of it. Like, he's just a small little stringy douche-looking dude, you know, who stands mm-hmm. toe-to-toe with the Man of Steel, like, literally a god on Earth. And, you know, brings him to his knees, like, in front of him, and bends him to his will and breaks him. And I've always loved that about this film, too, where he's able, it makes it believable to me. I don't doubt that for a second, that he's able to kind of break him in that way.
Now, one of the things I really appreciated about this movie in regards to Lex is the fact that he has father issues. Because, let's face it, one of the themes that this movie carries from start to beginning, the three main characters, Batman, Superman, and Lex Luthor, have father issues. And their fathers and their legacies loom largely and influence the way that these characters behave. So I appreciated the fact that this wasn't the Lex Luthor that we knew. It was, quite frankly, it was Lex Luthor Jr. So I think that's, again, one of the things I think kind of gets lost in people's mm-hmm. interpretations of this film.
Well, if this is truly Alexander Luthor and not Lex Luthor, you know, then that makes more sense. But, like, the way he's portrayed, or I'm sorry, the way that he was portrayed before the movie is like, this is the Lex Luthor that you should know from any other medium of like comic books or animated shows or whatever. Like, this is that Lex Luthor that you're thinking of. And then when it wasn't, everyone just went, oh shit, I hate this guy because it's not the same thing. It's not what I was expecting.
Well, it goes back to the complaint that people had with Batman killing people. It didn't deliver what had been seen before. But if they had retread the same ground that came in previous movies, it would have gotten complaints from just being a rehash. Kind of like the same thing that happened with Superman Returns. As much as I like that movie, and I'll still defend that movie 10 plus years later, they did a lot of things in that movie that Richard Donner had done 30-odd years before.
I want to pitch it back over to Tomko while Dan thinks of what he wants to say. any other talking points that you wanted to bring up about this film? You know, either something that you wanted to get off your chest about it or something that you really wanted to gush about or whatever.
All right. What do you think the legacy of this movie is going to be? Because that's actually been kind of a talking point with like that big Variety piece that came out a couple months ago with Jeff Johns. Not to mention, you know, just the fan community.
Studio intervention. I feel like studio, like the big legacy that's going to come out of this is studio intervention. Because, like, if you compare the theatrical cut, which I accidentally watched probably 45 minutes of the theatrical cut, like a few weeks ago, like before this. And watching the first 45 minutes of the extended version, I just went, man, the extended version is just so much more cohesive. And if we would have gotten something more cohesive from, like, the theatrical cut, I don't think this would have been as hated. Because that's the other, to me, the other big criticism from the theatrical cut is just how choppy it feels. Like, especially after you watch the extended cut. When you watch the extended cut, you're just like, oh my god. They explain, like, they actually explain why people think Superman killed a bunch of insurgents and rebels and shit. Like, and you're just like, well, that never got explained in the fucking theatrical cut. Like, I remember watching the theatrical cut and like, wait, why does everyone hate Superman again? I don't get that. What's everyone's problem here?
I think once we see the rest of the DCEU play out, I really think that that's a kind of a, you give a twofold answer. Is the rest of the DCEU successful? Like the path that Geoff Johns is taking it on now with, you know, where we got things like Wonder Woman, of course, Suicide Squad, it was too late in the game to really make the kind of changes, you know, to the overall narrative and the overall structure of this, like they were able to here. But I think if the rest of the DCEU is successful, and thinking of Justice League in particular, if it's successful, like with critics, with audiences, in terms of box office, then, you know, I think then eventually, like, I think maybe a little bit more of a kind light will get cast back on this, and people will start to look back at the better aspects of this film and really start to respect them more. Even though when you watch the trailers, you'll still see those assholes that'll sit and complain about, you know, the world mourning over Superman's loss or anything. Why the fuck are they mourning about him? He's just a mopey asshole. And like, which is a complete misread of that character in this film, as far as I'm concerned. But if the DCEU, however, fails, you know, if Justice League is a complete failure, and then, you know, they continue to be scatter their cards to the wind about who knows what, they start recasting people in roles, which we all are pretty sure it's probably going to happen with Batman after Justice League comes out anyway. But if the DCEU fails, like if it continues to fall off the wagon, or at least if Justice League falls off the wagon, I think people are just going to keep pointing the finger back at this movie as like a point of blame, or more specifically, maybe not so much this movie, but Zack Snyder. Unfairly, I might add. I think he's really, really unfairly maligned in this whole process. And I think a lot of people really, really, they say that he really doesn't put together cohesive narratives. I would disagree with that, because I really, really think that he does. And I really think that this film, especially the Ultimate Cut, has a very, very cohesive narrative. It's very clear from the outset exactly what this film wants to do, both in terms of its character arcs and in terms of its overall story arc. I really, it's literally straightforward. And it's a great, great video on YouTube. The guy that does the Cinema Wins channel, like, go watch his Everything Great About Batman versus Superman video, because he fucking hits the nail right on the head about this film, literally every point, in a far more succinct fashion than we are here tonight on our Batman versus Superman spotlight, I might add. But yeah, he literally hits it note perfect, point for point for point, about, you know, why this film is great. And I really feel like this film is great. And for me, for me, the legacy of this film will always be that it's great. And I think eventually, as the anger wears off and as people revisit it later, I feel like people will enjoy it more. And I feel like people respect it more, respect more. There's going to come a time, you wait and see, a few years down the road, when we'll get some shithouse piece of shit. Zack Snyder will be long gone from the DCEU, and people will start overwhelmingly wishing for the days of Zack Snyder. It'll happen.
Now, as far as myself, I think the legacy that has already kind of formed that I'm noticing is, I think this movie is an interesting study in toxic fandom, because I think regardless of what this movie would have given us on screen, it had an uphill battle the moment they announced Ben Affleck. As soon as he was, you know, cast, a lot of people just completely dismissed this movie. They thought that it was going to be a joke.
Oh yeah.
And everybody, rather than maybe giving it a chance or maybe admitting that they were wrong, they went full steam ahead and they latched onto every little bit of criticism, sunk their teeth in, and shook it dry. That's why I think you have people complaining about this interpretation of Lex. That's why I think you have people complaining about the fact that Batman kills, even though Batman kills in literally every other film incarnation that we've had since 89. And let's face it, that bad word of mouth did serious damage to this movie's box office performance. Oh, yeah.
I feel like it just gets kind of thrown under the bus because of how bad that initial backlash was.
It's the meme mentality that the internet is kind of responsible for.
Yeah.
I want to get wrapping up on the film here, but I think that there's one more thing, or maybe a couple more things that we haven't mentioned yet, that I think we have to mention if we're going to talk about this film. And it's Martha, guys. I think we have to talk about Martha, if only because, and I said it earlier when I wrote my notes about the spotlight that we were going to do tonight, I will definitely admit that it comes off as a little ham-fisted and a little cheesy. It definitely does, because it's very abrupt, and you've spent, especially in the extended cut, you've spent over 2 hours turning these two characters against each other in every way possible. And now, like, literally on a dime, we have to have our big comic book action spectacle finale. So we have to get them together really, really quickly. I think it's ham-fisted, but I also think that it really, really works.
You know, I do.
I think that's why, to go back to what we talked about at the beginning of this, that's why they had to replay the Wayne murders, because when he hears him say his mother's name, he immediately sees himself, you know, as a child in Superman. What wouldn't young Bruce have done to save his mother's life in that moment, or his father's life? What wouldn't he have done, you know, to prevent that tragedy from happening? And he realizes everything he's believed about Superman is wrong. Everything that he's believed about him has been coming from this place of anger. He's been blinded by this own kind of just mad, like, angry quest. I'm trying to think about his legacy and everything. And I think that he really sees Clark in that moment. He projects himself, like, as a young boy. That's why you get those shots intercut in that moment back to the Wayne murders. He sees in, you know, Superman, he sees himself, who he was the moment he saw his parents get gunned down in that alley. And I think that's enough to snap him out of it and you know, bring it around. Yeah, like I said, yeah, it's ham-fisted. You know, it really, really is. And I get why people don't like it. And I get why I still think it's a funny meme. I think it's funny. Did we just become best friends? Yup. I get it. But at the same time, like, I think it's bigger than that. I think it's deeper than that. And I think people don't give it enough credit.
No. And frankly, the name Martha has nothing to do with the reaction to that scene. It has nothing to do with the fact that they have the same name. It's the fact that Superman has a mother. He has humans that he cares about, that care about him.
And in that moment, that's all he cares about is his mother. He doesn't even care about himself.
Exactly. And the fact that Superman is being seen as a human instead of this invading or potentially, you know, genocidal madman of an alien, the fact that Batman can see him as a human, that's the point of the movie. I think if they had avoided the word Martha, if they had said, "Save my mother" instead, I think the scene would have been a lot more clearly conveyed. A couple minutes ago, you mentioned Cinema Wins, the YouTube video that they have in regards to this movie. Definitely go seek out the movie, the video clip that a filmmaker called Brett Culp did on this movie. And he explains the scene in a much more eloquent way than I am capable of myself. But I think that this is probably one of the most misunderstood scenes in the last 10 years of film, I think.
I would agree.
Oh, without a doubt. Because everyone's just like, oh, look at all this meme potential we got here. And they just start rubbing their hands together and like, I can boil this down to its essence, which is just two guys screaming the word Martha at each other. And in reality, it's just like, hello, this guy has humanity. That's all Batman's point has been, is like, this guy's an alien and he'll just fuck up this planet because he's all powerful. And then it's like, oh, I understand, because he has a human mother. You know, this is someone who he thinks of. It's like you guys were saying, this is someone who in his potential last moments he's thinking of, as opposed to saving himself.
Well, not just a human mother, but a human lover.
Yeah.
I mean, and that just comes down to, and Nick, I think you pointed out, it's Terrio's dialogue. Oh my God. Like, there are points in this movie where Terrio's dialogue is like, I'm pretty sure Terrio has never talked to an actual human being if this is how he thinks conversations go. Like, oh God. The whole 1%, like, the fucking Bruce Wayne just being like, yo, if there's a slight possibility that he's our enemy, then we have to take it as an absolute certainty. I'm like, I get what you're trying to say there. And that is a very paranoid Bruce Wayne kind of Batman kind of thing, because Tom, you would know this better than I would, but there's a comic arc where the Legion of Doom gets their hands on Batman's contingency.
No, it was Ra's al Ghul. Yes.
Oh, it was Ra's?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Tower of Babel.
That's it, Tower of Babel, where Batman is like so paranoid and he wants to have a way to defeat all of the members of the Justice League that he has contingency plans locked away that only he can get to, and Ra's gets into it and, you know, makes them go through that. That is very much a Batman line, that whole 1%. If there's a 1% chance he is our enemy, we have to take it as an absolute certainty. That's a terrible line, but it's a very Batman way of thinking.
Yeah, it is.
And I just feel like Terrio could have... If somebody else who's actually talked to human beings before walked into the room and just went, that's not how you say it, and you know, rewrote the line, it would have helped. But like that's my big problem with Terrio, is like, it's like this dude has never had a conversation with a real human being before. It's like he's talked to one of those chatbots, and it's just like, oh, hello, chatbot. How are you? I am wonderful, Ryan. I hope you are doing many well things today. And it's like, what? Who talks like this?
It just goes back to what I said at the beginning. This would have been a much, much better movie if they had given the script a couple more passes.
We talked about the legacy of it when you brought it up earlier. There's always that reactionary where you're going to have people that are going to say that the DCU succeeds in spite of this film. Like, regardless, like, they won't credit any of the success to Snyder. Say the DCEU goes on to be just loved and lauded from here on out. You know, once Snyder is gone, and then everybody looks back and, you know, kind of derides the Snyder era, as it were. And I don't think that's fair, because I think that, number one, I don't think that there is a better visual director working in comic book films than Zack Snyder. And I mean, you know, I think Snyder is as good as the material he's given. Like, I think that's why. Yes. That's why the dialogue, like, I love Man of Steel. It's my favorite comic book movie, but I hate the dialogue in that film, because Dan might think that the dialogue in this film is bad, but I think even he would admit that the dialogue in Man of Steel is even worse, because God, Goyer's dialogue is terrible, but that film does so many things right that it's okay. And I think that this film, there were so many great things about this film that were well-intentioned and that were just beautiful, just utterly beautiful. I still tear up at the end when, you know, he sacrifices himself to kill Doomsday, and that shot where, you know, Doomsday crashes to the ground and he flops over and you just see that big fucking chasm in his chest, and he's just lying there. And then they do that great shot where, you know, Superman and Lois Lane are at the center, and then Batman and Wonder Woman are just flanking them, and he pulls out.
It looks like some kind of Renaissance painting.
It does. Shot. It's mm-hmm. such a beautiful, beautiful moment. It's so sad. And then I love, especially the extended cut, because the film takes a while to wrap up after that in the extended cut, but I love it because you get that full funeral. I love all those shots that Snyder does where he just moves around an empty Metropolis, and you hear that Zimmer score just booming in the background. And I love all the shots that you get of the parade, that, you know, they're leading his casket and, you know, firing the cannons and playing bagpipes. And, you know, you get that cut against the shots of the funeral at the Kent farm, where you've got all these, you know, burnt, you know, dishes that are being brought for, like, potluck style to the Kent home. And, you know, old Pete Ross is there, and the pastor from the first film are there. And, you know, it's a very, very small, very intimate, very warm and kind of cozy affair. And then you cut to the shot of Heroes Park, where you just see this massive crowd gather just in tears. And I think that's the point of this film, and that's the point of this character, and that's what you should have seen when you watched it. And that's what this character is the whole time through this movie. That's who he is. He is a symbol of hope. He is an enduring, you know, somebody to look up to, you know, and someone who will lead them into the sun, as it were, as, you know, Russell Crowe says in Man of Steel. And I really don't get people. I will never understand people that read this film and say, Superman's too dark, Superman's too mopey. I mean, the film is dark. The film's tone is dark. The film's subject matter is very dark. But I think Superman is still a bright point in it, and I still think Superman is hope. And I still think, like I said earlier, even in the light of everybody that doubts him, even himself, he has to go and he has to kind of do a little gut check, and he has to have a one-on-one with his dead dad, whatever, fine. But, you know, another great thing about this film is the cost of being Superman. And that's a thing that's constantly driven home from the beginning with the desert scene where Lois says, you know, there's a cost to pay, there's a price to pay, to right where Jonathan Kent says that he, you know, washed away the whole Lang farm. You know, there are consequences to being Superman. And yes, not everybody's always going to like what you do, but is it still the right thing to do? Yes, because he still does it all the time, like never endingly, enduringly, always, up to the point where he gives his life to save the entire fucking world. And what is more Superman than doing everything in your power up to and including giving your own life to save the world and to protect the people that live on it?
Now, one minor detail that I think I at least appreciate that Zack Snyder put it in is the fact that, yeah, there was the full military honors funeral in Metropolis, but that was fake. Because Superman, he would have wanted to go home. At the end of the day, at the core of his character, he's a small town farmer, and I appreciate that they brought him home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think the reason why this movie has merit, if nothing else, is it's been well over a year and a half since it's been released, and we're still talking about it. We're still interpreting it. We're still debating it. We're still dissecting it. Can you think of a lot of other movies of any genre that you can say the same thing about?
Yeah. And that's, I think you're exactly right. And I think you mentioned Legacy before, Tomko. Mm-hmm. That's right there. You know, this film is still a hot, hot discussion point. And I think it's because there's still, I think there's just that much to unpack here. I really do.
There is.
Oh, my Lord. Well, gentlemen, this has been a treat. You, of course, can find these fine gentlemen as part of our Podfix network. This is also going to go up on the Podfix YouTube page, as well as Epic Film Guys, so please check it out there. Dan's from Netflix and Swill. Tom Coe is from Jake and Tom Conquer the World. Find him on the interwebs. Find him on the podcatcher of your choice. They do great shows. Well,
hey, don't forget that Couch Party app.
Do I?
Download that Couch Party app. Or you can just listen to Miserable Retail Slave and not listen to Jake and Tom Conquer the World. Thank you guys very, very much for joining me here tonight to talk Batman versus Superman. I will be on Jake and Tom Conquer the World as well as Justin. We're going to be recording for a pre-Justice League show. So we're going to be basically talking about all the things that we are hoping for and all the things that we're kind of looking for in terms of Justice League. Like, what do we want out of it? What don't we want it to do? Do we want its runtime to be 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours? Nobody can make up their fucking minds, apparently. Whatever.
Yeah,
forever hours.
Yep, it's gonna be the first part of a crossover, and we'll wrap it up on this broadcast as well.
Yeah, and yeah, they will be back on Epic Film Guys, and then we are going to finish up with a Justice League review in depth after the film comes out. It's absolutely great. I can't wait for it. And Dan is going to be reviewing Stranger Things. I know he binged the entire show today because he's a sick son of a bitch.
I'm a professional binger. Like,
this is true.
Just because of the show, I have to be a professional binger at this point, because the recording schedule I put us through, because I basically show run, I don't know how Caleb hasn't murdered me yet.
I'll tell you how, because you'll tell him what to watch, and he just doesn't watch all of it.
That's true. I actually asked him for an update earlier, and he was like, I'm on episode 6, and I'm like, it's possible. He actually could get through all of this.
That's pretty good for Caleb. Yeah. There's some shows that you guys have reviewed where he's like, yeah, I've watched like 2 of them.
Every season of House of Cards, he has not watched the whole season.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And it's hilarious because, like, you'll hear towards the end of the review that I'm the only one talking, and then it'll be like, and then, like, afterwards he'll be like, yeah, I stopped watching after, like, episode 9. I'm just like, motherfucker. Which is why I was so happy when we had Nick on, because then it could just be Nick and I talking about House of Cards.
It was like that whole time. I think I remember when I came on for House of Cards too. Like, eventually at some point Caleb just chimed in. He was like, yeah, you know, the rest of that show, the rest of that season sounds really good from what you guys are talking about. I'll have to go back and check it out one of these days.
Well, I mean, not to bring up an old subject, but I mean, it's like Jake, he was supposed to watch Drive a couple weeks ago because he's never seen it. And of course, he didn't. But sure enough, he watched a couple porns. The amount of prep time he does in his porn reviews is ungodly. I mean, as much as we talked about this movie, he could probably spend just as much time talking about the Batman v Superman where they're both doing Wonder Woman.
You never did. Oh my God.
Do I want to see that? Do you know the oldest
lie in America, Senator? I don't want to see that.
Why not?
Ew. It's like it's like the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus double teaming the Tooth Fairy. I don't want to see that.
I want them both to scream Martha as they Eiffel Tower women.
Gentlemen, this has been fantastic. Thank you all very much out there for watching. Thank you all out there very, very much for listening. And I don't know, Justin and I gotta go watch Jigsaw tomorrow. That's right.
Oh my God, I'm so excited for you to watch that.
Me too. Thank you very, very much for listening. For myself, for the Holy Spirit of the Podfix Network, Mr. Tomko, and for, I don't know, the fetid asshole of the Podfix Network, Dan Brennick.
The other hole. I'm the Holy Spirit, he's the other hole.
I'll take it.
Thank you guys all very, very much for listening, and we will see you at the movies.
The red capes are coming. The red capes are coming.